What do you want Jesus to do? Here is an ancient Chinese story that I came across some years ago. The story goes that there was a farmer who had an old horse that he used to use for tilling his fields. And one day his horse escaped into the hills, and when the farmer's neighbors heard about it, they sympathized with the old man over his bad luck. Bad luck, good luck, who knows, said the farmer. A week later, the horse returned with a herd of wild horses from the hills, and this time the neighbors congratulated the farmer on his good luck. Good luck, bad luck, who knows, said the farmer. Then when the farmer's son was attempting to tame one of the wild horses, he fell off its back and he broke his leg. And everyone agreed that this was very bad luck. Not the farmer, who simply replied, bad luck, good luck, who knows. Some weeks later, the army marched into town and forced every able-bodied young man to go and fight in a bloody war. But when they saw the farmer's son had a broken leg, they left him to stay at home. And everyone was very happy with the farmer's good luck. And the farmer said, good luck, bad luck, who knows? Who knows indeed? Life's like that, isn't it? Sometimes it seems like things are going really well with us, and at other times, well, things are going pretty badly. Some people believe it is based on luck. Other people claim it is based on fate. And still others believe that God uses our good fortune or bad circumstance to reward or punish us. I was very aware when I was living in Toronto among all kinds of different ethnic groups that belief in luck played a big part in how people in that city view their circumstances. By the way, do you know what the second most spoken language in Toronto is now? It's Mandarin, by the way, Mandarin Chinese. Many decisions were made by individuals based on their belief that it would either enhance or just simply protect the level of luck they had in their lives. For example, traditional Chinese people will never buy a home anywhere with the number 4 in its address. And the reason for that is the symbol for the number 4 is very similar to the symbol for death. And they believe it's bad luck to have anything that mentions or represents death. The number 6, though, was considered lucky. They also, by the way, ladies, maybe gentlemen care about this too, never had white wedding dresses. White was the color of death. You never wore it to a wedding. They wore red. In our culture, we have, or some people have, lucky rabbit's foot. I don't know how they're lucky rabbit's foot. It wasn't lucky for the rabbit, but anyway, okay. We have 4-leaf clovers people carry around. We avoid the number 13. There's still buildings around that don't have a 13th floor. We avoid walking under a ladder or having a black cat cross our path. I have a black cat, so it's always crossing my path. I don't know. We knock on wood when we feel that we have tempted fate. We toss salt over our shoulder if we have spilled any. And heaven help you if you break a mirror. Heaven help you. I've noticed, I don't watch sports like some of you folks might, but sports pros also have a lot of rituals when they play sports. They think things that they think will bring them good luck or sustain a winning streak, like the NHL's playoff beard. I don't get that one at all, but anyway, that's fine. Whether we think it is luck, fate, or divine involvement, all of us know what it's like to feel like we're getting tossed around in life, in life circumstances. We all want to have an explanation as to why this is happening to us. So when I read the Apostle Paul in Philippians 4, where he talks about learning to be content and even happy in all things, I wonder if Paul is all there mentally, to be honest. In fact, it's even more startling when you learn that he says he was happy in all things, or even when things were bad, and he's writing that from the Philippian jail. He's in a jail when he writes that. He was happy even when things weren't going very well. Elsewhere, Paul writes in Romans 8:28, we know that in everything God works for good for those who love him. You think that's true? When all of life seems to be conspiring against us, what possible good can I look forward to? Now, I'm sure that Bartimaeus must have questioned many times in his life the goodness of God. Not only was he blind, but it is very clear Bartimaeus lived in extreme poverty. It is likely that he was also quite lonely, because there are very few women in Jesus' day who would marry a blind man, because there is no possible way they could ever earn an income to support them. In Jesus' day, a man or a woman in circumstances like that of Bartimaeus had very few options to stay alive. And begging was one of those few options, and Bartimaeus had chosen the only course he believed was open to him. Every day he came or was led, or it is even possible he lived on the road where he begged, the road from Jericho to Jerusalem. And there every day, whenever it was possible, he would lay out his outer cloak in front of him. And he would call out to the people who passed by, asking them for alms or asking them for a little bit of money or change. And since the Passover was drawing near, there would be a lot more travelers on the road. And Bartimaeus probably had hopes that this was his kind of best season, if you like, because there would be all those pilgrims passing right by him. And maybe because they were on a religious pilgrimage, they would be a bit more generous. How many of you have been to a Blue Jays game? Yeah, some of us. If you take the train in to Central Station or Union Station, you notice what happens after a ball game? You walk the corridors going back to the train station, and there you find beggars parked at each doorway going into the train station, asking people who've just been to the ball game to be a little generous, to give some money to them. Wherever large crowds happen to be going, there are usually people there asking for money, and it was no different in Jesus' day. Beggars wouldn't go and sit in a dark, desolate place because nobody would pass by there. They were always where people were. So here we find Bartimaeus doing whatever he could do to encourage people to give him just a little bit of money so he could buy some food. Is it good luck? Is it bad luck? Was it fate that brought Bartimaeus to this place? We might wonder also about whether any possible good could come out of Bartimaeus' situation. I've mentioned this many times. We've talked about this, that in his culture, in Bartimaeus' culture, in the Jewish belief system of that time, and still in the belief system of many people today, Christian or Jew or any other background, that was believed that disabilities, deformities were caused by sin. In John 9, that famous story of the man born blind, the disciples asked the question that everybody had on their minds: whose sin caused this man to be born blind? Was it his own, or was it his parents? It's not an idle question. Some people even today believe that calamities that fall on people are the result of God's divine retribution, like the great flood in Noah's day. Excuse me. I've heard over many years now, sometimes even famous people or preachers speculate that AIDS is God's judgment on homosexuals. I've heard that. Even though thousands of heterosexual people die of the disease every year. Maybe not so much now with the medications. I've heard burning sermons about the circumstances like the one recently in that devastation of Florida where God was expending his vengeance on that city, on that state, or on the country of the U.S. Is that true? If it is, I'll be frank with you and say that I'd rather be governed by good luck or bad luck. I would rather have a mindless series of events than a directed hostile intervention. There are a lot of angry and disillusioned people in this world who feel life has dealt them a bad hand. People who feel they are forced to make difficult and painful decisions, like watching refugees by the thousands march out of South America towards the southern U.S. or getting on flimsy life rafts to get across the Mediterranean. Is there any reason at all in this world to believe the Apostle Paul when he writes that good things come to those who love the Lord? So what do we say to people whose life experience has been extremely difficult? What response do we make to the thousands of desperate people who have been displaced by war, economic hardship, or hopelessness? How do we pronounce hope to a man or a woman like Bartimaeus? Or the folks that we encounter in our daily lives who are asking us for a little spare change? Maybe we wonder, how can we glean hope for ourselves? I guess the first thing we need to settle right now is this. What exactly do you want? When Jesus asked this question of Bartimaeus, I at first wondered, well, just how omnipotent Jesus really is. Does Jesus not see that Bartimaeus is a blind man? Isn't it obvious to anyone what Bartimaeus wants? I mean, he's stumbling around trying to reach Jesus, his arms outstretched, feeling his way through life. Are the needs of people not clearly obvious to anyone with eyes to see and ears to hear? The more pressing question, of course, isn't it obvious what we need in our distress? I'm sure that it was obvious to Jesus that Bartimaeus was blind, or what Bartimaeus wanted, but maybe we're not so sure about ourselves, what we want, what we need. Maybe the greatest personal pain we experience in life has to do with not really knowing what we really want. We may know what our immediate wants are, but what is it that will truly enhance our lives for the long term? Think about Bartimaeus for a moment. Here's a blind man who for years sat on the busiest road in the city with his outer cloak laid out to receive whatever money people would give him. What does he want from Jesus? Does he really want to be healed? Perhaps we forget that if Bartimaeus is healed, Bartimaeus is now going to have to get a job. He can no longer use his blindness as a reason to beg from other people. Instead of sitting at the roadside, he's going to have to get up early every day and go and maybe work in some farm fields. Hard physical labor. Is he prepared for that? Commentators on this passage point out that this incident probably occurred on the road between the old city of Jericho and the new city of Jericho. There was two sections. And the symbolism is very powerful here. If Bartimaeus is healed, he will have to move from his old ways to doing new ways of living. In other words, symbolically, he would have to move from the old city to the new. Are you sure you want Jesus to intervene in whatever it is that's plaguing you? Are you sure? I maybe have told this story, I don't know. There's a funny story I originally heard years ago in connection to Port Dover down there. And all of us know Port Dover is that lakeside community not far from here. Lovely beach area there. And well, and this fabricated story goes that there was an itinerant preacher and healer who was ministering to those on the beach in Port Dover. One day the preacher came across an old fisherman whose hands were crippled up with arthritis. And the preacher prayed over the crippled up old hands of the preacher. And wouldn't you know, he was healed. His hands were good. Another day, that same preacher was on the beach and he came across an elderly woman whose back was severely stooped over. And he prayed over her and she immediately straightened up and was healed. And then on another day, the preacher happened upon a man who was in a wheelchair, whose leg had been badly damaged and was in a cast. He was about to pray over that man, and the man said, "Hang on a minute. Don't you dare. Don't you want to be healed?" the preacher asked the man. "No," said the man. "Don't you want to get out of that wheelchair and walk again?" "No, not really," the man said. "Why not?" the preacher asked. "Well, to tell you the truth, I hurt my leg at work and I just got workman's compensation." If we ask for a miracle, please be advised that Jesus will demand that miracle takes us somewhere we would perhaps rather not go. So again, I ask you, as Jesus did, what do you want me to do for you? Are you prepared for the consequences? Is it really healing you desire, or are you just looking for sympathy and the attention of the crowd? Do you really want your relationship healed, or are you looking for an excuse to end it? Do you really want your children to find God, knowing that in finding Him, they may be called to the farthest corners of the globe and may even have to travel into some hostile places to serve Him? Do you see what Jesus is getting at here? Are you sure you know what you want? There's an old English proverb, isn't there? Be careful what you ask for, you might just get it. I don't know why I like these jokes today, but I do. I love the story about a childless couple who brought their heartache to their local Catholic priest. And he was about to leave for several years' service at the Vatican. And he offered that distressed couple that he would go to the Vatican and he would light a candle and intercede in prayer for them that they might have a child. And some years later, that priest traveled home and he visited the couple only to find the house was completely overrun by children. "Oh, how marvelous," he said. "My prayers have been answered, but where's your husband?" The tired mother said, "He's gone to the Vatican to blow out the candle." Bartimaeus knew what he wanted. And in many ways was prepared to accept the challenge he inherited in getting what he wanted. "I want to see," he said. And Jesus replied, "Go your way. Your faith has healed you." But Bartimaeus did a very wise thing, didn't he? It's a lesson for all of us. Bartimaeus got what he believed he wanted, and Jesus told him to go his own way, to go and find a direction. His life would now go with new vision. It's an offer Jesus makes to all of us after he intercedes for us. You see, Jesus is a gentleman. He never forces us. He never coerces us to doing something we would not do of our own free will. After Jesus heals us, after he restores our relationships, after he grants our heart's desire, he sets us free. True money, true mercy, true grace is always offered with no strings attached. Do you remember the 10 lepers Jesus healed? Do you remember those guys? The only obligation they had was to go and show themselves to the authorities, the religious authorities, to show that they were clean and therefore be declared clean. After that, they could do whatever they wanted. Only one leper voluntarily returned to thank him, and it was a Samaritan, by the way. We are always free to do as we please with our newfound health or wholeness. Always. I notice Jesus does this with every case of healing almost. He heals people and he tells them to go. Find their way. He doesn't force them to follow him. He doesn't force them to take any direction. He lets them choose the path they will take. Bartimaeus was free to go wherever he wished with Jesus' blessing. But what does he do? Did you notice? What is his reaction to being healed? To receiving an answer to his request? Bartimaeus is said to have followed Jesus along the road, or more literally, on the way. Of the many courses Bartimaeus could have taken in his life, he chose to follow Jesus. In fact, Bartimaeus' account of being healed is probably significant for a lot of ways, but the story is so vivid in detail that it's certainly a first-hand account. And because he's named, which almost never happens in the healing stories, commentators believe Bartimaeus may have been a member of the early church. His choice was to follow Jesus. The early church was often referred to as the people of the way. Bartimaeus chose to follow Jesus' way. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asks every single one of us that question. In our distress, in our effort to fight through the crowds to be heard by Jesus or by God in Christ, do we even know what we want? I think I know what all of us want, at least initially. We all want to hear these words. Cheer up. Come on. He's calling you. I think in the end that is what we want more than anything else. I think we can endure a great deal in this life if only we had an awareness that Jesus knew we were here. That Jesus was willing to listen to us, to heal us, to resolve whatever crisis we have in our current lives. Well, cheer up. Come on. He's calling you. But if you want to be near him, you have to respond. You have to get up and go to him. Maybe that's why we suffer so much. We just don't want to move from where we are because we know that if we get close to Jesus, things are going to change for us. The most powerful thing that will change is that we will be given new vision. A vision of what our lives can be despite our struggles and despite our impairments. What do you want Jesus to do for you? More than anything, more than physical healing, more than restoration of your relationships, more than a new job, more than any possible problem you have. Jesus wants to offer you a new vision and a new direction.